Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Fervoy, filling in for Alex this week. For all of us students here at the University of Minnesota, the around-the-clock routine of classes and homework can be overly repetitive and consuming at times. It's possible to go weeks at a time without ever going outside the bounds of campus except to go home and sleep. In the thick of it, it's easy to become trapped in a mundane loop with seemingly nothing new to experience from day to day. If you relate to this sentiment, then perhaps you're in need of some new sights and smells to liven up your day-to-day campus lifestyle. Today on Real College Podcast, we've devoted the program to highlighting some of the hidden gems that reside all throughout the U of M campus. From 3D printers to the finest of hydration stations, our reporters have sought out the best of what this grand university provides in the hopes that it might liven up your day a bit. To begin, not all bathrooms are made equal. Maybe you've got your go-to campus toilet, but if you happen to be in the market for a new spot, then you're in luck. Reporter Maurice Swanson has assembled a list of some students' personal favorites.
So, where is your favorite bathroom on the U of M?
My favorite bathroom on the U of M is definitely in the sixth floor of Elliott in the north wing, because you look out and you get a really nice view of the city. It's excellent.
My favorite bathroom at the U of M has to be the one in the basement of Wilson, right by the Dunn Brothers. Great full body mirror.
Okay, there's one really good one in the plant growth facility. It has flowers in the tiles on the floor, so it's really cute and like goes along with the theme of the building, so I like that very much.
First floor in Falwell. It's got a nice large stall with a little window that you can look out onto university.
I would have to say my favorite bathroom is the bathrooms in the basement of the Northrop Auditorium, because I feel like they're just like feel as grand as the rest of the auditorium, and like no one's ever using them. Very big, very well lit, feels very fancy.
My favorite bathroom is on the fifth floor of the Biomedical Library in the Philip Wangenstein building. You can only get up there between the hours of 9 and 5. But if you can, there is a single person stall and there has never been another person on that floor. Like, I've never even seen someone in the building before. It's just me in the bathroom, hanging out, having a good time.
I gotta give that to the bathrooms at the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory where I used to work in St. Paul. There's a bathroom in there on the first floor, and I liked it because the door locked to the whole thing, and then when I'd be early in the morning, like working and like too tired, I would just like go in there, lock the door, turn off the lights, and I'd just like sit down on the floor and put my head against the wall and just like go to sleep for like a bit.
<What's that? laughs>
And like, I don't think my bosses will ever hear this, so it's okay. I would sleep for like, you know, probably like longest like 20 minutes, you know.
Now, despite all of the amazing suggestions that have been made by the people of the University of Minnesota, I couldn't stand and let this go to air without mentioning one incredible bathroom. Some of you may have been lucky to experience this already, but if not, I'm here to introduce it to you. It's the gender-neutral bathroom at Green Hall on the St. Paul campus, and I took some fresh eyes to take a look at it.
You guys have never been to this bathroom before, correct?
No, I don't think so.
I have not.
Okay. Behind this door is a whole new world. Who dare?
I dare.
This is for one person.
Wow.
Do you notice where the lock is?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, there's clothes hangers. Wow. They recycle the paper towels. There's a gorgeous window with a view onto trees. Imagine this when it's all blooming.
Wow.
Yeah. We got two sinks.
Two sinks and a nice long mirror for one person. ultimate privacy.
Ultimate.
There's an outlet. Yeah. Where? Oh my God, you can even charge your phone in this room. You have so much at your disposal in this bathroom for one person.
Yeah, I understand.
Do you get the hype?
I get it. I totally get it, Murray.
If you're really thinking it's still far too public, you can even pull down the blinds. Like, look. It's just got everything you could ever need.
Yeah, this is really great. This is,
I kind of want to live here next year.
Yeah, do you think they sign leases?
You could really put a little...
If you put a bed here.
Yeah,
I could live in this room.
This is bigger than a lot of people's rooms.
This is like the size of my room, for sure.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. And this one has a stall. My bathroom doesn't have a stall.
Like,
I'm sorry, my bedroom doesn't have a stall.
Yeah, you've got closet, you've got clothes pegs that you can put everything on.
You can bathe in the toilet.
Yes.
So there we are, some of the best bathrooms at the university. Use them wisely. For Real College Podcast, I've been Murray Swanson.
Right outside many of those bathrooms just mentioned, another important campus amenity can be found. Reporter Casey McCabe brings us an interview with the elusive character who many consider the leading authority on campus water fountains.
The most essential resource to life on the planet Earth is water.
Water!
Here at the U of M, we are blessed to have clean potable water and to be situated on the quaint Mississippi River. What some of you may not know about the U, however, is that we have our very own water fountain connoisseur, Jimmy, or as he was known on Instagram, Jimmy Drinks World. I met Jimmy at the Rec Well, the location of one of his favorite fountains, to ask him why he started Jimmy Drinks World.
Yeah, so the idea for the account kind of came from my friend who started an Instagram page. I think it's called The Size of Ghosts, but the question that he asks everyone is, do ghosts get bigger? And it was just kind of like a fun, kind of dumb thing to do just to, like, you know, get out there. And he told me I should do something similar. And I'd put a couple things on my Snapchat story just about water fountains around campus. So I kind of got that idea. And then, you know, first couple of posts got the ball rolling, just figuring out like the formatting of what I wanted to do. Try to give a little synopsis or fun story or analysis. And then it just kind of took off from there.
The account has been operating for about 4 months and now has over 1,500 followers. Jimmy, an Illinois native, is currently enrolled in the Carlson School of Management and told me what he looks for in an ideal fountain.
Yeah, so I'd say the main one is the coldness of the water. That's like the biggest one, and that's the one I always start with on the review. The two metrics I use are coldness and pressure, but I think, for me at least, coldness is more important. Beyond that, things I don't really rate but go into my like decisions about like if I like the fountain or not is definitely like the stream. Like, I kind of like pretty steady, like thicker stream.
Jimmy takes into account additional factors such as stream height, spread, and taste before making a ruling on a fountain. He also utilizes a point system for rating the fountains that assigns values to these factors. Jimmy told me, based on this scale, where our listeners should quench their thirsts.
Where we are now in kind of Cook Hall, right as you take kind of the skyway by the pool, on the left, kind of right by where you would go down to like the racquetball courts. That's one of my favorites on campus anywhere. Like, it's really good. It's got the big button, which is kind of fun too. That's a great one. The one in the Gopherway on West Bank, as you're going from Blegan to Wiley, kind of in between the library and the Gopherway, kind of by the Pete's Coffee, in between the lockers. There's two really, really good ones. Those are arguably the best ones.
I asked Jimmy about water fountain etiquette and what you students should do to be classy. Jimmy recommends that you should drink until you run out of air if you are thirsty, and if there is a line, you should wait for others to take a turn. He also had this to say about water bottle fillers.
One thing that's like kind of annoying is if there's like a lower and a higher fountain and someone's using the high one just to get water. If you have a water bottle, I don't like when people like go for the fill, because then it like reduces the pressure in that one. It's like, just like wait a second, it takes 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Jimmy plans on continuing his service until he graduates and is considering an identity reveal at some point. For all your water fountain needs, please visit Jimmy Drinks World on Instagram. Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.
If the bathrooms and drinking fountains around campus aren't academically exciting enough for you, there are some other kinds of gems around the U. Reporter Hannah Dove brings us inside one space where you are guaranteed an escape from the mundane goings-on here on planet Earth.
When people think about hidden gems, they normally think about those secrets hidden away in the crevices of the U's basically ancient buildings. But what about the secrets hidden right above our heads? Every Friday night during the school year, the Minnesota Institute of Astrophysics teams up with the Bell Museum to put on a public telescope viewing along with a free space presentation about almost any topic imaginable. From supernovae to the Big Bang, students present on any and every space topic under the sun from 8 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., followed by a, weather allowed, peek through the historic telescope hidden at the top of John T. Tate Hall. But don't just take it from me. Here are some experiences from fellow bona fide astronomy lovers like myself.
My name is Forrest Hunt. I use they, them pronouns. I am a plant science major, and I learned about it because my friend presents.
Hello, my name is Ian Mix. I use they, them pronouns. I'm a linguistics major. I found out about the weekly astronomy nights through my partner.
I've actually only gone once.
I've gone twice. I went the first time with Forrest to see a talk on Saturn.
Yeah.
Just all about the planet Saturn. And I really loved it. So I ended up going back to another one with a couple of other friends, and they were going for their first time. The second talk was about gravitational fields.
Whoa.
I've just had a blast every single time.
So something special about these presentations is that they're all free and they're all open to the public. So how does that enhance the experience?
Well, yeah, the great thing is families come and they bring their kids, which I think is really awesome. Like, the kids are mostly interested by seeing the telescope at the end and seeing the observatory. The kids, once they get into, like, the observatory, they just have all sorts of questions.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And the students that do the tours and the presentations are really good with the kids. You know, answer the questions in a very, like, understandable way. And you can tell that a lot of the kids find that just, like, way too cool. I kind of consider myself, like, an amateur enthusiast of astronomy. I don't really understand the science, but I just find the topics really interesting. And the astronomy nights are really perfect for that. They teach things in a not too obscure way. They don't tend to use, you know, too many highly complicated words and things like that.
It's led by, like, people of our age. Like, it's led by, like, astronomy TAs. And I think that makes it slightly more interesting because, like, the people talking about it are, like, people we can relate to. And so oftentimes they present the material in a way that's a lot more digestible.
Now, these presentations normally only run during the U's school semesters in the fall and the spring. However, during the summer, the presentations move into national and state parks within Minnesota, and you can stargaze out in the open night sky. How is that experience different from staying inside Tate Hall?
I think it's a lot more profound to get to see stars out there, because obviously
it's like an entirely different feel when you're out in the park looking at the stars, learning about the stars.
Like, you kind of get out into national parkland. And I know this through experience of sort of camping with a friend of mine who's in astronomy. But, like, you look through a good telescope out there and you can see, like, spiral galaxies and things.
Really?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you see them and they look like, at least through his telescope, they look like little disks, like little smudgy disks.
Whoa.
And you can actually see, like, the shapes of these things. I think it's really good to offer that opportunity to just the average person.
Do you have any parting remarks about the astronomy nights?
What's really kind of exceptional about what they're doing with these nights is it's them kind of doing what a lot of other sciences don't do, and they're giving, like, a very approachable way to learn about that science. It's kind of like public outreach in a way, because, like I was saying to Forrest at one point, it's not like with chemical engineering you can kind of go to, like, a weekly lecture, as far as I know, and they'll, like, bring you into the labs and be like, here are, you know, crazy machines that deal with chemicals and whatnot, or, you know, with any other science for that matter. I'm not sure they really offer that opportunity, so I think what they're doing is really cool.
Astronomy.
And there we have it. If you too are interested in learning about astronomy, there are a couple more presentations left over before the semester ends, including one about black holes, the coolest, hottest probe to touch the sun, the Parker Solar Probe, and the Opportunity Rover. So make sure you stop by Tate Hall at 8 p.m. and learn all about space. This is Hannah Dove, signing off.
Have an idea that you've been sitting on for a while? A number of so-called makerspaces around the U facilitate student creativity and provide materials and guidance for such endeavors. Reporter Natalie Goosey has more.
I'm over here at Brunex. Where can I find a 3D printer around here? Well, what's the place that actually has a drone on campus that I could, you know, borrow and do, you know, mapping with or fly around?
We have drones?
What?
there are a couple drones. There are a couple drones on campus.
These are the types of questions that Jonathan Kofel, an emerging technology strategist for the University of Minnesota Libraries, gets to help students answer every day.
I essentially try to think about what are the new technologies or methods that the libraries can help support and how best we can support them.
I sat down with Jonathan to talk about the current projects that he's working on and how students can get involved with innovation on campus and start their own projects.
One of the big projects we have going on right now is the construction of the Health Sciences Education Center, which is over on the Health Campus just south of Washington Avenue. Which is going to be a large building dedicated to a lot of active learning classrooms and helping move health education forward. But the libraries also is going to be moving into that in a whole bunch of new technology-rich spaces, like a makerspace and easy one-button video creation studios, a virtual reality, augmented reality lab, and more. So it's very exciting.
I asked Jonathan what projects he's already seen being made in makerspaces on campus.
They run the gamut from people making mini figures for their role-playing games to printing bioreactors to help with stem cell cultivation to printing spinal models to help with help prepare for surgeries or understand patient anatomy better. Working with a faculty member right now to create a new tool to better understand immunology. And how different heavy chains and light chains are created. So it's a real mix of personal projects where, you know, this is I'm learning 3D printing to make a present for my mom, to I'm trying to make something that really can affect health education or patient care, we've seen other cases where, you know, we're building a sensor to help us understand how many people walk in and out of the door of the breaker space. So we're using the tools of it to try to make the space itself better.
If you're interested in getting involved with your own project on campus, there are already a number of makerspaces available to support your project.
Getting involved is really easy, at least for the library's makerspaces, one of which is in the Walter Library and the other is in the Deal Hall, which is the biomedical library, are totally free and open to anyone to come and use. All supplies are free. The workshops we do are free. So really all you have to do is walk in the door. We have starter projects, make of the week, and friendly people there to help you out.
The Minnesota Libraries is an important part of an expanding network of innovation spaces on campus.
There's really a network on campus, and exciting to see that grow as we refer people to each other's spaces and helping to make sure that wherever you are at the university and whichever of our innovative spaces you come into, it serves as a gateway, as an entry to other spaces on campus.
Another landmark in this growing network of student innovation spaces on campus is the Anderson Student Innovation Labs in the College of Science and Engineering. I sat down with Ben Genrich to talk about his experience managing the lab and what kinds of projects go on there. Please note that this interview was recorded in the actual makerspace, so you'll hear machine noises in the background.
I manage the Anderson Student Innovation Labs, which are part of the College of Science and Engineering. It's a makerspace for students to use for classes, for student project teams, researchers, or even just personal projects. Probably like one of the coolest projects that I've seen people work on is not class related at all. There's an Internet of Things student group that meets in the lab every Friday. And so they do cool stuff where they'll like do random home automation projects. It's a lot of people who are like totally new to it, but then also people who have like a lot of experience and like working on really cool, like, exciting stuff. So a couple of the students from that group have been working on like an automated wheelchair. So it's this project where people like strap a headband. People in the wheelchair or wear a headband, and then right now it's working where they can tilt their head I'm doing all these gestures, but I know we're recording a podcast. But anyway, they tilt their head, and then the chair moves in that direction to free up their hands. But the idea is to eventually get it to be sort of like a brain sensing automated wheelchair.
Was Anderson Labs like already a thing before you came here?
No. I think basically, as far as I understand it, there were some students pushing to have sort of like more space available to students to work on different projects, because they would have project-based classes as part of the mechanical engineering or electrical engineering curriculum, but then like nowhere for them to actually work on stuff.
Yeah.
So they lobbied the former dean of the College of Science and Engineering to sort of like make these spaces available, and so they renovated the space and ordered a lot of equipment, but then they didn't have anybody to manage it, and so then they hired me, and I've been the first person to manage it. And people are really sensitive to like the needs and desires of students, so I guess I'd urge the listeners, if they are students, if there's something that they like want to push for, talk to either like faculty or staff. Often they know like channels to like, push things forward.
Finally, there's nothing like a bit of nature and wildlife to help bring some excitement to your day. Reporter Tosin Fasimo proves that you don't have to stray far at all from campus to become fully immersed in wildlife.
Winter is finally fading away, and the weather is gradually getting warm. As a result, University of Minnesota students are beginning to spend more time outdoors, appreciating the extra sunlight and better temperatures. They can be seen playing frisbee on Northrop Mall or walking their dogs across the Washington Avenue Bridge. As we approach the end of second semester, my friends and I have looked for ways to relax by enjoying the outdoors. Our favorite way to do this is by taking a short walk to the Mississippi River and observing the scenery. I sat down with a couple friends of mine to discuss this activity in more detail.
What's your favorite thing about being down by the river?
I really love coming down here because the river reminds me so much of just kind of where we are and the present moment that we're in, and really just taking in your surroundings and kind of taking a minute to just sit and look and really, really appreciate what's around you.
Minneapolis is a really metropolitan place, so it's really nice to have a peaceful place you can go and just hang out with your friends and get away from classes and everything being so busy.
There's some graffiti down there that looks pretty sick. The river's there and looks pretty sick too.
Have you had any interesting experiences down there?
We've had some incredible experiences. One time, like, I was down there with a couple friends, and one of them was you. I forgot which one mentioned the beaver, though, but was like, hey, is that an animal? And I'm like, no, you idiot, that's not an animal. But then, sure enough, what was it? It was a beaver just swimming around down there. And so we tried to get closer to it, which, in hindsight, I realized was a bad idea, and we definitely should not have tried to do. So, you know, then me and this other girl were trying to get down close to it, and then, you know, realized when we were right down by the bank that, oh, crap, there's another beaver right next to us. Just, you know, a couple, probably 5-10 feet away. So that was terrifying. And so then we ran up and then left the riverbank. But so yeah, that's about all that story is. But yeah, some beavers there. So if you see beavers there, you know, run the other direction.
I saw turkeys for like the first time down there and found out they're so much bigger than chickens. I can't say this for sure, but I bet if it was a nice day, you could see some fish down there.
Like, what advice would you give to someone who, like, wants to go down by the river and, like, just chill?
But, I don't know. It's muddy, so.
Don't wear nice shoes, because it's muddier than it looks, and it's also a longer walk than it looks like, so wear a windbreaker or something, because it gets really cold by the water.
Just go down there and hang out. Probably see some tokers down there, maybe some homeless people. Don't get scared, though. They're just, you know, chill down there.
We haven't actually done this yet because it ended up being really cold the day we were going to do it. But a really good idea is to have a picnic with your friends, because college is expensive and we're all too poor to actually buy food. So then you can just have a picnic instead, but make sure the ground isn't muddy.
Yeah, and then you could get some food to some homeless people down there sleeping. You know, humanitarian work. Sure. Philanthropy.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Tosin Fasimo.
That's all the hidden gems from Real College Podcast this week. Thanks to the whole team of volunteer reporters. Maurice Swanson, Casey McCabe, Hannah Dove, Natalie Goosey, and Tosin Fasimo. Real College Podcast is produced by Lizzie Ritchie, Liv Riggins, Ben Hallam, and Nathan Fervoy. Alex Schumacher is the host and managing editor. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K, and all our episodes can be found online at RadioK.org as well as on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Check us out on Instagram for updates and other behind-the-sounds content. Thanks for listening.